Mr. James Reel 30. So the actual day the Tunis fell, do you have any memories of that? And the news that the...
Oh yes, there was jubilation. There was well, everybody thought, good God, that's who done that. The African Corps beaten. I mean, we remember particularly before Tunis fell and the big American fortresses flying over in box formation on this last day but one, on the last day, giving them hell. We were all bottled up around the Tunis region. There were so many of them we couldn't miss. And the American Air Force came over and dropped their bombs, you know, from these boxes. And, cars must be terrible. But anyway, they were all rounded up at Tunis, 250,000 of them. And Hitler wouldn't allow a Dunkirk for them. They had to face the music. They had to take this. The officers escaped, I think, and one of them escaped. But we later saw, of course, thousands of them. And we later went, we went at that time back to Gardimor, I think it was, for some duties. And when we were there, we were told that we had to find a detachment for the Tunis Victory Parade. Well, I was detailed to be like Markham, and I remember going to Tunis in Squadra, just outside the city, the night before, with our detachment. Each of us was given one night baby and a ground sheet and a blanket. Cooks came to provided meal for us as well, and we had a smart, I think that we had a smart khaki drill uniform to wear for the parade. And
so what's the difference between khaki drill and battle dress?
The battle dress, of course, was English heavy, they were at the time, and we had the English ordinary battle dress, which wore for full times. But khaki drill was for hot countries, North Africa, Tunisia.
Does that mean shorts?
And, shorts during the day, long trousers during the night, because when darkness descended, you had to change into long trousers so the mouses wouldn't bite your knees and give you malaria. And you had a sort of, you had jackets with turned down sleeves, which you had to button up. So that the mosses wouldn't bite your arms and so on, and you had to put on mosquito cream and take Mepiclins every day as well, a yellow tablet to ward off malaria, should you be unfortunate to catch it. Sometimes did catch malaria. But anyway, we were given new blacklists, new KDs, khaki drill, the uniforms for the Tunis Victory Parade. And I remember, anyway, pulling mine under my ground sheet. Sleep on it, but during the night I was aware of movement and I thought, no, I dare think about it under my backside. And that was my imagination. But I didn't sleep very much from then on, as it was about 4 in the morning before dawn anyway. And I was glad that daylight came, and I still wasn't sure. When daylight came anyway, before the rally, I was up. And I struck my bib by pulling the pegs out and flinging it over. And I took my bracket up and I whipped the ground sheet and I was lying in a bloody enormous snake that was coiled up. It was as big as an enormous dinner plate, about an inch thick. And when it was extended, it must have been about 4 foot long. And it leapt into life and went like lightning. And I shouted, snake, snake! Everybody ran after him with shovels and bayonets. Trying to stab it and pick it, one man cut his head off. I got him, another chap got a knife and slit it open, it's got the leg and belt on the snake skin. And I thought, of all the people to bloody choose, it would be me. And I've never, that's one of my memories. This snake was highly poisonous because it was green and orange and horrible.
And how many men were on the victory parade with you? How many DLI men?
Detachment, actually. I was right marker, or detailed to be right marker.
So how many men altogether?
You know.
I would think, remembering, trying to remember the day, we must have been at least 40.
And can you remember any of the other men that were with you? Any of the names of the others?
Well, I can't. They were all the lads, but I can't. They were a motley lot. They were chosen quickly from the duties that we were undertaking at Gandhi Mall. We had to come back 60 miles a day or more to Tunis and for it. And we arrived the night before and slept just outside the town to give the beaver cooks. It was a wonderful time.
So to describe the parade.
The day when it broke up in this early morning, you know, this bloody snake. That's the beginning of my day, that was. But I was glad that was over because I knew that I felt it in the day of the night. And he must have crept under me for warmth. And it is strange, and it was a perfect circle as well when I looked the grouchy the way. I've never forgotten it. And I thought, what a day. I shan't ever forget this day because of the snake, as well as the two of us which were prayed. And we knew it was going to be on the news film. Partly Gazette, I remember seeing the cameras along the route, and it was going to be shown in the cinemas. And I remember writing to my mother to go to the cinema and I wonder if she might see me, like, you know, but I mean, there were so many on the way that it's a vast, tremendous, wonderful parade. Maybe all came, I don't know.
So were you marching at the 140 paces, light infantry pace?
140 paces at the minute as BNI at the trail. I changed arms at the trail. Over and left hand held as a rifle on the trail, instead of the right hand. And we were marching. And we came to the well before we never set off, actually, you know, because you know we had to be formed up. But I remember it was led by Uhlans, I think they called them, on white horses. And they were leading the display of their white chargers, you know. And they had some wonderful cavalry at the beginning. But anyway, we were the guns, and we were behind the guards. The guards' detachment was in front of us, and they had their own music, and they were sitting 90 to the wind, I think. But we were somewhere behind them, marching at 140 paces to the minute, and eventually marking time for a long time, and then allowing them to go on. Before we then march again at 140 paces per minute, drawing from the crowds and those of the soldiers applause because of the drums. And when we reached the other days, on the I remember the French generals there, and Macmillan was there. Macmillan was he has a special task.
That's the future Prime Minister, Macmillan.
Yeah, but that's right. Yes, but he had a special task at that time, some special duties to perform, diplomatic duties. But he was there on the days, and he was crying. Years and years and years later, on television, he had his memoirs, and he was being interviewed by somebody, and he said that when he saw the magnificent white horses of the, you know, the picturesque Arabs, but when he saw the British Tommies come, he couldn't conceal his tears, and he choked. He was choked. Here we were, gone through the belt of North Africa, brown knees, suntan little warriors, the British soldier in khaki uniforms. Ever to be relied upon and trusted and never let down.
What else do you remember about that day?
I can't remember. I mean, it's a wonderful day, but I can't remember much else. It was a tremendous experience.
Were you conscious of Eisenhower and the other top brass? So did they?
Eisenhower was not there. There was a French general who surrendered to us at Oran. I forget his name now. It was on the tip of my tongue. I used to know his name. It wasn't General Gérard. He was another French general who came over, of course, to the Allied cause. He was on the days. There was a good French representation there. And then an American general, but Eisenhower wasn't there.
Before you moved to Bleda, the battalion history talks about how you lined the road for Churchill, and do you remember anything
Churchill
about that?
Churchill visited us, that's for a fleeting moment.
You know, what do you remember about that day?
Churchill visited us when he was out there, and that's right, and of course, the great man, yes, I can just vaguely remember him on that occasion as well. But the troops loved him. He stopped at certain places. He spoke to so many troops. Yes, he did come out. And of course, it was the first victory of the war. They rang the church bells in England.
During this period at Gardamal, again, the battalion history talks about the possibilities of like recreational trips to the local resort, which I think was Lacalle. Did you ever?
Well, it was Lacalle and Constantine and things like that, but I never visited them. Although I think I did visit Constantine because I bought a postcard of Constantine and Lacalle and I posted them all to my mother.
And earlier, when we talked about your big win at Bragg on the boat, this is where that story has its in the aftermath of Seginain, you talked about how the padre asked to buy some. Could you talk about that a little bit about that again?
After Seginain, the padre.
Yeah, where you were your gambling money was spent on comforts.
Yes, well,
for
anyway.
Because this is like, but we talked about that a little bit too early last time.
Yes, well, of course, at one time during the battles in Tunisia, when we had lost quite a lot of men, padre, that I remember, approached me and he said, I think the company commander, Joe Berlin, had told him that I had won this money and that he had changed my money into francs. And that I had about £89 worth of French francs to spend, you see. £89 worth of French francs, pounds worth, you know. So anyway, so the padre came up to me and he said, I understand that you were the banker. He said, I've been told that you won a lot of money on the boat. I said, yes, sir. So he said, I wonder if you'd be kind enough to let me have that money so that I can go to Bourne and buy some comforts for the lads. He said, the aim is, he said, if you've got £89 worth, the aim is to give them 10 shillings worth each. And he said, and I'll get them to sign on an impressed form for 10 shillings worth of goods, 10 shillings. And he says, when we all, it's all over and done with, you'll be reimbursed and we'll get money back. So I said, immediately, I said, it's yours, Padre. He's thanking you, wouldn't say no. So I gave him the money. And twice 89, 87, it was 29, 50, 58, and 58, 29, 87. Twice 87 is 174. So he could give 10 shillings worth of goodies to 174 men, and I was very pleased about it. He went to Bourne, he came back with razor blades, cigarettes, sweets, shaving soap, and all the goodies and things like that, and 174 men benefited. Well, of course, I knew that we'd be going back into battle and all this sort of thing, and we did lose quite a lot more men. And officers, and the party left the battalion.
So this was pre-City Barker, pre that battle?
That's right, it was during the campaign, and I didn't regret it one moment, and I knew, well, then it was the fortune of war. The poor lads that sacrificed their lives, I've sacrificed my bloody card winnings, and I didn't regret it one moment, and I've never pursued it. I don't think the paperwork ever went to York. I think it was lost or abandoned, the officers had disappeared, and it was goodbye. It was easy come, easy go, and that was the end of that.
And that was Padre Lambert rather than Padre Meek.
Padre Lambert.
Yeah. Now, you moved to Bleda at this time. What happened there? What were your memories of that place?
Well, we moved back to the Algeria, Algiers area, and Bleda is about 30 miles from Algiers. such as, I think it's afterwards towards the Sahara, and we were at the campus there, being reformed. They reformed the company, the battalion. We were reinforced by all sorts of fresh lads from England, and we were brought back to full strength and trained in the Atlas Mountains and mountain warfare. At that time, I remember, we had new officers. I mean, I remember Major Johnson coming to take over B Company, and I remember that my new company commander was going to be Captain Tom Reynolds, and I was going to be headquarter company. So the battalion was really reformed, and we knew that we were going, having done mountain warfare, to another theatre of war within the mountains.
Now, just to stop you there, so at this stage you were going to headquarters company. Was that a CSM of headquarters company?
I was made in June, I was made company manager.
Of which company?
I was promoted to company sergeant major and appointed to headquarter company. There was Tony May, I think in A company. There was Georgie Gates in another company. There was C.K. Mrs. Crosby. I remember particularly, the CSMs at that time were well known to me. And Tubby Baker was still there, I think. Yes. But anyway, I was headquarter company.
Yeah.
And I was headquarter company at Solano.
Well, we'll get on to that. But so you've moved to Blady. You talked about, or you've mentioned, training for mountain warfare. What did that involve? What kind of training was that?
Well, it involved route marches, it involved endurance. These lads were new to North Africa. They had reinforcements out from England. And the battalion was reformed and was back in data full strength. And it was wonderful. Everybody felt, you know, that we were now again. An army, back to a full scale 60th BMI, ready for more action.
Was there any new equipment issued at this stage that you hadn't seen before?
Well, of course, everybody's brought up to date with all the new equipment. I can't remember particularly any particular different equipment.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you were issued with a Tommy gun.
Is
that the first time it's.
Well, of course, the Americans by this time. And they had built the fleet under their American Kaiser plan. They had manufactured new landing craft known as LCIs and LSTs, landing ship tanks, and so on and so forth. That was all new equipment, of course, it was all Americanized. But it was for the American Army. And we had Tommy guns. And American rifles.
Had you trained on a Tommy gun before, previous to this?
No, but I certainly had one for myself, and I cherished it. It was marvelous. The information was ammunition was 0.45, you know, and I had a good old time having practice with it. I used to shoot the tree trunk. I remember particularly.
What did you feel about the Tommy gun as a weapon?
Marvelous. I think I've seen him on the films, George Raft and all the gangsters, and I had one. And
so did you fit?
So
it was like a famous instrument even then from the movies.
It was wonderful to handle. You felt safe with it, you know. It was wonderful. No longer than the SMLE rifle or single shot. Here you had this Tommy gun. And cool.
Were they issued to the rifle?
A lot of them in the battalion. And I don't know what because I was no longer a CK, but I don't know what the establishment was, but a lot of chaps had them, especially sergeant majors.
And your duties now as a CSM, in what way did they differ?
I was doing soldiering again. I wasn't doing CKMS admin work anymore. I was now involved in discipline and drill an arms drill, and going with the lads, and, you know, and being at the head of them. And it was a different life.
What did you feel about that? Because you'd had like a bit of a sedentary time.
Well, I really felt that it was thanks to Major Whalen. I remember particularly he promoted me. He was responsible, really, I think, for the appointment.
And he was adjutant at this time?
He was, that's right. But he was earlier, I never left the battalion, but I remember particularly that he was going to charge Private Stamp, for example. You know, he blew his thumb off. And we were going to have a court martial. And he said that eventually he'd seen Stamp and he's back in the battalion. And then he's going back into action and the charge was dropped.
Were you doing any training for an amphibious landings at this stage then at Bleeder, or did that come later?
Training with what?
For amphibious assault, were you on the landing?
We were told that we would eventually that we would be going. But Churchill spoke to the officer. He said that he told Hitler that before we leave the Baltic Wall, there would be bitter fighting in the Mediterranean. And that, well, he said that in August. But of course, we thought, what a silly bugger, starting off like this, saying, before the new portal fall. September the 9th was the day of invasion of Italy. And we went back to Bizerta in the early part of September, and we were there for about a week before we actually took part and got into the ships. But meanwhile, we could get a mask, we were aware of the build up, and we were bombed every night.
This was at Bizerta.
The attack was so intense. The attack was so intense that it was raining shelter. And we all had to wear our sea helmets.
So the amphibious training came later when you moved back to Bizerta. The battalion history talks about how at this stage at Bleeder it mentions this was the first chance for the sergeants to get together, and there was like officers' dances and things. Can you remember anything about that?
Alexander Thomason, of course. He was a good one. He met Sergeant Major. And so for the first time, we were a battalion all together. A bit of us, of course. We got to know the new additions to the recruits, and we were aware of the setup and the newcomer commanders, appointments, and all sort of thing. And we had quite a lot of spare time as well. We're going to Bleeder with cavalry transport. Going to Algiers from Bleeder again for a second look at Algiers.
And was that similar to your first look at Algiers?
It was very similar. It was very similar, actually.
So, a veteran...
Except it was more crowded, you know, at that time, because the war was over. And quite a lot had gone back to the Algiers area, actually.
In terms of the new intake of officers and NCOs, do any kind of personalities spring to mind? Any men that made an impression on you that you'd never met?
Yes, especially the KY. We had quite a lot of KY and I reinforcements as well. A bunch of them called Sergeant Fred Gould. He was very good. Of course, he came with Tom Nellens, and Tom Nellens was my company commander. I went into who he was until one day he said, Sameja, look at this photograph. He said, who's that? I said, good God, sir, it's Monty. He said, yes, that's Monty's son. And that's my father, Major Reynolds, and that's my mother. Monty's son is in my father's school, being educated in somewhere down near Stonehenge, you know. I said, good God, sir. He said, oh, yes, he said, well, we are. Well, now you know who I am. So, it was so. This Major Reynolds, Tom's father, was frequently mentioned in the press. And obviously Montgomery was impressed by his discipline and divided by his high education standards and had his son being educated by him.
So what kind of man was Reynolds? What kind of officer was he? Was he?
He himself was a poor man. I mean, I don't have to say, but he was, we called him Long Tom. He was about 6'2", gangling, well, as I would say, he wasn't the smartest, so just to look at.
Do any other...
The MC.
Do any of the... any of, I mean, would you have had kind of NCOs that were wounded coming back? People like Vic Walker?
Yes, I can't remember who they are now, but yes, we did have, you know, the hospitals were being cleared of the chaps of convalescence, and the vaccine had a lot back. Yes, I suppose some of the officers came back as well from the hospital. We did see quite a sprinkling of patients. Not many, but some.
Because at this stage you'd had the first gallantry awards to Private Ledbetter and Major Balance.
An event, particularly, of course, we knew about his award before he received it. We were very pleased for him. He deserved it. There were as well other MMs, the people came out of the MM, and there was a cordial of the MM, and quite a bit of the war office in its wisdom, when the battle's over, they've got their closure of honours from the battalion, and they were dished out.
So, any other? I mean, the Blade, you mentioned off the tape, the business of was it a captured German camera or something where you had your photograph taken?
Oh, yes, I had a. I took a Zeiss Econ camera from a jail prisoner of war from Tunis.
How did he feel about that?
Well, I just saw that and said, this is mine, and took it. And they were, okay. And I used his camera because I wanted to, I couldn't get through the damn thing. I found films eventually. But they were poor quality Algerian films. So I got it in Beaver and I used it. I took Captain Pritchard's photograph and he took mine with Sergeant Battle and CQS Crosby. The prints were very good, but nevertheless it was a record of something in Beaver with the tents, meeting bottles of beer, and all the thing, and smoking my pipe, and life as it was. It wasn't a very, very brilliant place to really be there. We had the hot Sirocco winds coming from the planet. We couldn't breathe. Sweat would ooze out of your forehead, every pore in your body. You'd lose gallons of water, and we didn't have it to replace the loss of the sweat loss. But it was you couldn't breathe that day. I was very glad to get away from there, mind you, we were 30 miles from Algiers from the sea into towards the Sahara. We were on the fringe of the Sahara, I believe. And it wasn't very pleasant.
And it was commonplace then to take things from the prisoners to.
Oh yes, that's right. It was fair game, actually.
So what would be taken?
Well, I mean to say, we wouldn't sort of rob them, but it was done. If you saw something, say, I want this, you don't want this anymore. And so then, I took this nice Econ camera, which is what I wanted, and I got away with it.
And it'd be if a prisoner had a wristwatch or something, that would probably go.
Well, they didn't want it. This chap willingly let it go.
And this was at Gardamal, would this be, where this would have happened, when you were guarding the prisoners? Guard a mile.
I don't know what happened after we went up to after the distinction parade. We didn't go back to Guard a mile. that was our role. That was one of the things that we were going to do. But we went after the Guard a mile. I suppose that was a dispersal point. He was a brain head, you see.